I was running three different Java binaries of Microsoft Visual OpenJK, one for Windows, one from Apple Silicon, and one for Mac Intel. You know, just to show that we want every developer, no matter where they are, to be able to take advantage of all the technologies that we produce.
I actually compiled an embedded Linux kernel in WSL2, wrote it right to our embedded system. Embedded Linux built inside of Docker, inside of WSL2, inside of Windows, which was kind of freaky, but also pretty cool.
We humans are like that. We tend to search for things when we have a problem to solve. We tend to learn when we have the need to learn. If we can learn faster, and AI and LLMs allow us to do that, then we definitely should leverage that.
You're listening to SimplyBlocks Cloud Commute Podcast, your weekly 20-minute podcast about cloud technologies, Kubernetes, security, sustainability, and more. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to this week's episode of SimplyBlocks Cloud Commute Podcast. This week, you know, I have another incredible guest. I say that every time. It's true every time. This time, somebody I actually know for a very, very, very long time. He's been with Oracle for many, many years. He's with Microsoft for also quite a few years so far. Bruno, welcome to the show.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me. Awesome. Yeah, and you're right. I've been at Oracle for about 5 years and a half, and then I was at Oracle for about that time, and then now I've been with Microsoft since 2018, so almost, well, 6 years now. Yeah, it's been quite. I've been at Microsoft more time than I was at Oracle now. Just completed my extra year, so I can say that I did my dream of working as a Java engineer for the company that does Java, and now I'm at the company that does the alternative to Java, but I'm on the Java team, so we can talk about interesting things there.
All right, as long as Microsoft is never going to go back to J Sharp, I think we're
no,
all good with that.
No. When we announced the Microsoft build of OpenJDK, we had lots of jokes about that. We thought about doing a prank, April Fool's joke. We thought about announcing Microsoft build of OpenJDK on April 1st. And we didn't do anything like that. But one thing that did happen when we announced Microsoft build of OpenJDK was that an anonymous group of Microsoft employees, and some of them ex-employees, we don't know who are these people, but honestly, I don't know who are these people, but of course they saw the news that Microsoft announced Microsoft build of OpenJDK, or that we were about to announce that. They published a blog post called the Microsoft Coffee, and it was a prank that they did back in the days, where Microsoft, what these guys faked software boxes. You remember when you used to go to a library store, a bookstore, and you can actually buy software that comes in this round mirror-ish device called CD? And we would actually put inside the computer and install software. They did this prank back in the days where they printed software boxes with the logo Microsoft Coffee. It was a prank on Java at the time. And they actually put dozens of boxes across different stores in the Seattle area in the US. And the local press saw that, and they said Microsoft is announcing a software. And basically the prank went too far.
Right. So, for the audience, obviously Java is an island, it's a coffee, it's a programming language. So
yeah.
It's a running gag. Just in case you don't know, now you
know. Exactly. So anyhow, if you search for Microsoft Coffee on Google or Bing, whatever you choose, you're gonna learn about this thing. There's also an account on Twitter called twitter.com or x.com/Microsoft Coffee, and you're gonna see the blog post that they published at the same time that we announced Microsoft build of OpenJDK. telling the story, the behind-the-scenes story about that prank. So, there's that, and it's an interesting fact that folks would love to learn about.
Yeah, yeah, I'll try to find that. If you have the links, just send it to me. I'll drop it in the show notes, because that sounds amazing. I did not know about that.
There is a YouTube video showing the news anchor talking about the new product. Like,
right,
it's a prank. Anyways.
Yeah, yeah. I can, to be honest, with a company like Microsoft, I can totally see how this goes way over the top.
They used to do lots of pranks back in the days, you know, like Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer and video recording, like dancing, you know. Microsoft. I mean,
everyone knows that time. Bill is famous for his stupid jokes. So, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like, but now we do like AI.
So you're still doing stupid jokes. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
But we do jokes that are actually, you know, funny.
All right. Let's get back to the AI topic in a few. Let us know a little bit more about yourself. To be honest, I was kind of surprised. I thought you've been with Oracle much longer. So that was quite.
Yeah, I joined Oracle in 2012, and then I left in January 2018. That's when I basically joined Microsoft, and then now six years later. It was an interesting transition, you know, like coming to Microsoft to help them talk to Java developers about Azure, about cloud, about Microsoft developer tools like Visual Studio Code, and now GitHub after the acquisition. And then one of the interesting things that happened in the early days was that I found out the amount of Java that runs inside Microsoft. And it's not as big, of course, as many other companies like Amazon or even Google, perhaps. And of course, Netflix and the likes of that, the amount of Java, like even Twitter has a lot of Java. But Microsoft runs, our latest estimates, it's somewhere between 2.5 to 3 million JVMs running in production inside Microsoft for internal systems. Does not count Azure customer workloads.
Right.
It's just internal stuff. And we like to say... Yep.
And that is all on Azure, or how does that work? Or is internal stuff?
No, internal stuff. Some Microsoft internal stuff runs on Azure data centers. Some stuff run on Microsoft in proprietary data centers, Azure is proprietary, but not inside Azure data centers.
Right.
LinkedIn, for example, is entirely Java. The backend is 98-99% Java, and hundreds of thousands of JVMs run for LinkedIn. Then we have Minecraft servers. We have Bing, the search engine. We have Azure Control Plane, which is another, it's an internal technology that helps us orchestrate the Azure data centers.
Mm-hmm.
We do a lot of messaging. We like to say two things. One, if you click on your start menu on Windows, that's powered by Java. How does that, what does that mean? It means that when you click on start menu on Windows, you see some of Bing recommendations, Bing search events, news, whatever, right? All of that is coming from Bing. And Bing has a lot of indexes technology based in Java.
Okay.
And because of that, we make that joke that, you know, the start menu of Windows is powered by Java. The second thing is Azure. So when you go on Azure portal and you create a resource, let's say you want to create a database, like a Postgres database, the Azure portal actually sends a message to Control Plane, and then Control Plane will send a message to whatever data center you asked that resource to be created. All that messaging system is done by a pub/sub scheme that is implemented in Java.
Okay, it's not JMS or anything.
There's a lot of Kafka. There's a lot of Hadoop. There's a lot of Pidoo. There's a lot of Spark, and there's a lot of Scala as well because of the big data stuff. There's a lot of Android code, Java for Android or Kotlin. Yeah, I mean, it's massive. You know, at the time that we that Log4j vulnerability happened, I got a phone call on my Teams like, "Hey, Bruno, do you know where Log4j is used across Microsoft?" I was like, "I don't know, probably everywhere."
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So we went digging and we found hundreds and hundreds of projects inside Microsoft using Log4j.
Yeah.
And we went ahead, of course, and cleaned up everything. Helped customers on Azure to mitigate as well. But it was an interesting thing where people are like, "Oh, we did not know we had Log4j. We didn't even know we had Java." And yeah, we do.
And it was one of the biggest problems, right? A lot of people didn't know they have it as like a transitive dependency or anything.
Oh, yeah.
For the audience, if you don't know what Log4j is, we, by the way, had an episode with Brian Vermeer just like a few months ago talking about mostly Log4j. I'll put it into the show notes.
Yeah.
So, Microsoft changed quite a bit over the last couple of, well, let's say the last decade, maybe a decade and a half or something.
Yeah, the last 15 years have been very different for Microsoft.
I think so, right? And Microsoft, well, you're the best person to say they changed quite a bit in terms of Java, because except for J#, after that, Microsoft didn't really touch Java at all, but they came back. But same for Linux, right? I think the Azure... Microsoft creating Azure and trying to make it big, which I think they did pretty well, changed quite a bit. Would you say that you actually see that like still happening? Is there still changes happening, like how that Microsoft works with open source communities or stuff?
Yeah, changes are happening all the time. When we published Microsoft Build Open JDK, was yet another transformation, right? You know, Microsoft having its own JDK. I mean, how crazy is that? And the second thing is Java support on Visual Studio Code.
Right.
It's amazing how far it has come. And thanks to the partnership with Red Hat, I must say. Red Hat drives the core language support extension. And then Microsoft provides all the extensions around it, like Maven support, JUnit support, project support, and so on. And now with the integration with GitHub and GitHub Copilot, GitHub Code Spaces, and all of that cool stuff, it shows really like how the company and its subsidiaries think about the developer. And when we think about the developer, it's not just the C# developer or the JavaScript developer, we also think about the Java developer. And that in the past would not have been possible. I think the Microsoft from the past would probably say something like, "We don't care about any other language developer. We only care about Windows developers and Visual Basic developers
and
C# and .NET developers, right? That's what we care about."
Right.
But no, I mean, the facts today show that we care about any developer. And you might think, well, that's obvious, Bruno, because Microsoft wants to grow its cloud business. Well, in part, yes, but also because we want truly to make every service and every tool, every product we produce to be able to be used by anyone,
right?
It's not an elitist tool set. It's not an elitist or niche stack of technologies. We really want anybody to be able to use that, so that they can be as productive as possible, as efficient as possible, deliver with quality, with speed, and everything. And if that includes Java developers, so be it. We're going to make sure that everything that we produce is equally as good for Java developers.
I think you're making an important point here. I mean, you mentioned Visual Studio Code, which I think, I don't know if it's like the biggest or at least the second biggest IDE by now, just like from 0 to 100. But also from a developer's perspective, WSL, or especially WSL2, made like a massive leap forward.
Oh yeah, I use Windows Subsystem for Linux every day. It's my default. When I open up my Windows terminal, the default is Ubuntu, not PowerShell.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And it's amazing because it is actually running a Linux kernel and what is it called, a micro VM, whatever you call that. I actually compiled an embedded Linux kernel in WSL2 and built it and wrote it right to our embedded system. Because it was actually an embedded Linux build inside of Docker, inside of WSL2, inside of Windows, right. Which was kind of freaky, but also pretty cool.
It is. I've compiled the OpenJDK a few times on Windows Subsystem for Linux.
That makes sense.
It works just fine. I produce a Linux binary off the JDK in my Windows computer. But I do want to point out that I am probably the weirdest Microsoft employee because my main computer is a Windows PC, and then I have a Mac, an Intel Mac,
right?
And I have a third computer, which is another Mac, the M1 Mac. It's not here in my office, but I have three computers. And I was 2 years ago, I was doing an experiment about JVM ergonomics, and I set up a lab on my office where I had a Java backend running on my Windows computer, a database running on Mac, and the workload generator to stress test on my Intel Mac. So I was running three different Java binaries of Microsoft Bit of OpenJDK, one for Windows, one for Mac Apple Silicon, and one for Mac Intel. So you know, just to show that we want every developer, no matter where they are, to be able to take advantage of all the technology that we produce.
Cool. So let's quickly go back to let's go back to the AI part, because I think there's one very specific and very interesting open source project that you were fairly deeply involved in, which was the semantic kernel for Java, right? So maybe just give a quick introduction for the people that haven't heard about that.
So semantic kernel is a Java library to help developers build intelligent apps. Imagine like, okay, I have Spring, I have Quarkus, I have Express.js, I have Django for Python. These are all frameworks that help developers build business applications in general. Semantic kernel is a library, but also sort of like a framework that integrates with your application to help you build intelligent features that will use, of course, LLMs, large language models, and AI services behind the scenes. So that allows the developer to not only do prompt engineering, but also do AI orchestration. So you provide plugins, you provide functions, you provide capabilities in the application, and then you tell Semantic Kernel, these are my capabilities. Mm-hmm. And then you can allow a prompt to say, I want to do this, this, and this. That's the prompt. Imagine that's what you tell ChatGPT.
Right.
But that prompt will make the AI behind the scenes leverage the capabilities of your own application to trigger those things as part of the flow. So that allows you to say, hey, give me the last financial results and email that to my boss. Okay, you have a function that extracts the latest or extracts financial results from the database, and you have another function that sends email. Mm-hmm. But you also have a function that finds the email address of employees. But your prompt is just something like, get the latest results and send to my manager. Okay.
Right.
The system knows who the user is. The system has a function that extracts the employee directory. So the system will know who is your boss. And the system will be able to find the email of your boss. And the system also has the capabilities in email. So Semantic Kernel will chain all of that and execute the request as per the prompt.
So Semantic Kernel means, or that means It basically helps you with the like agents, like the AI agents that everyone is talking about. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, that makes sense.
Exactly. And there are other alternatives, of course. LangChain4j is the main one. The Spring folks have something called Spring AI, also another library that does similar things. I believe Spring AI has also integration with LangChain4j, and we are also considering Spring integrations for Semantic Cardinal, Quarkus integrations, and Micronaut, and all the other Java frameworks, application frameworks. But in essence, that's what Semantic Cardinal is. It allows developers to more easily integrate AI capabilities into their business applications.
And I guess in the back end, it uses all the typical LLM services like Microsoft AI or...
No, you choose, right? The library is just a library. So you have to tell, okay, this is my AI service that I want to use. So right now we have support for Azure OpenAI, of course. We have also support for OpenAI, which is a different company.
Yep.
We have support for Hugging Faces. And I believe... I'm not sure if we have that support yet, but we do have a ticket on GitHub about Gemini, about Google's AI service. I mean, we are open to include any AI service into the framework, and if Google folks are asking for that, we're going to evaluate and maybe collaborate with them to make sure. The interesting thing about Semantic Cardinal versus LangChain4j is some customers like the idea of having a company behind a library, right? LangChain4j is great. There's lots of engineers. I know Liz is one of the engineers behind. She's amazing. She's doing an amazing job of on LangChain4j. But it's a community project. And that by itself can be a blessing, but it can also be a curse. And sometimes some companies may think, you know, I don't want to bet on a community library. Yeah. So I really prefer to use a library that is maintained by a major company.
That's one of the
value propositions for Semantic Cardinal.
Yeah, that makes sense, especially when you look into bigger companies. Lawyers tend to get like a little bit unwary when you just want to use some open source project, and they know they can't keep anyone in check if stuff happens, right? So you said all the services. Could I also use Olama, like building my own local thing? If not, there would be a ticket for that, I guess.
Hey, it's a GitHub project. Go send a pull request.
I can just imagine that a lot of people would love to play with that, but also love to use some local service to try it out.
I think we have that. We do have that in mind. Mm-hmm. I think I wonder if we have that as a work in progress or if it's just in the backlog. I have to double check. It's just that Semantic Cardinal is not the only project that I look at and help coordinate at Microsoft. We have Build OpenJDK, we have a migration tooling, we have some of our marketing initiatives and campaigns, and Azure features for Java developers, VS Code, Java features. There's a bunch of other stuff that I participate and contribute to. So that's why you will hear me a lot. Yeah, I'm not sure. We'll double check.
To be honest, I think that it's a great trait to be able to say that because you can't know everything. It's always important that you know where to look it up, right? We crossed the 20 minutes mark like 2 minutes ago. So last question, like when you look into the future, what do you think is like the next big thing for Microsoft, for database, for AI, for Java, for whatever you can think of?
I truly believe in two things. One, remote development environments will become the norm. Whether that remote environment is in the cloud or not, that's irrelevant. What is relevant is that for the developer, they have access to a remote environment that is more powerful than the machine that they currently have and will allow them to do all sorts of integration tests. Because the complexity of systems these days has been growing exponentially, and that requires environments that are more complex to be able to develop and most importantly test those systems. So the need for proper environments that mimic production environments will only grow. And I know there is Minikube and, you know, K3S and all these sort of, you know, capabilities to have a similar environment in your laptop. But the reality is, on your laptop, you'll also have Chrome, Slack, yeah, Discord,
exactly,
Spotify, and all these other things that are eating CPU and memory. So you need a dedicated developer environment. If you need a database, an AI LLM service, you need Kubernetes, you need a backend, you need a Key Vault, right, all these other services that your application relies on, you're going to need that. So emulating all of that in your local computer will be impossible moving forward. So I think remote development environments will become a big thing. And the second thing is developers will have to adapt to using AI as a tool, not as a capability for their applications. I mean, developers will have to build AI or intelligent capabilities into their systems. That's certain to happen, mm-hmm, but not for every system. Not every system needs an intelligent feature.
Tell that the world, please. Say it again. Not every
system. Not every system needs an intelligent feature, but every developer will need to leverage AI in some shape or form.
Okay.
In the past, I remember my old days. We went, as software engineers, we learned how to program using books. Then the internet came, and we continued to learn through books, just that, you know, online books. And then very quickly, we transitioned to articles and tutorials and user groups and online communities. And then we switched to videos, a lot of video on the internet, where we are capable of, you know, extracting information faster by someone just telling, you know, just getting to the point. Now we are digitalizing and aggregating all that information in a way that we can just ask the internet. You know, Isaac Asimov, famous philosopher, said, he predicted that the internet would exist. Not the internet. He predicted that a system, yeah, would allow anyone to just ask a question, and this computer thing would just tell you the, right, answer. That today, we thought it was the internet. But the internet got, let's say, abused.
Right.
The answer to that is not the internet. The answer to that is Gen AI. But it's thanks to the data that the internet produces that Gen AI is capable of answering the question. So LLMs, I believe LLM is the ultimate answer to Isaac Asimov's quote.
Okay.
So we developers have to be able to, I believe, use this as a tool so we can develop faster, better, and find that joy again in programming. You know, I learned how to program C++. Now, did I actually learn how to program C++? No. Any C++ developer will say, no, but you didn't learn. You learned how to ask good questions on ChatGPT and copy paste. And I was like, yeah, isn't that what programming is at the end of the day? You know, majority of developers do that. They go on Google and they find an article. Then they go and read the article. They understand the article. They copy paste. It works. Done. Next problem. We humans are like that. We tend to search for things when we have a problem to solve. We tend to learn when we have the need to learn. So if we can learn faster, and AI and LLMs allow us to do that, then we definitely should leverage that. So those are my two predictions. Remote development environments and Gen AI or LLMs will be a daily tool for developers.
Okay, cool. I have my own thoughts on that, but for the sake of time.
My hashtag my opinion.
Exactly. Like Exactly. All right. I like that. I think that is a perfect way to end the show. My opinion. Stop that.
Hashtag my opinion.
All right. Bruno, thank you for being here. It was awesome to get the chance to talk to you. It's been a while. And for the audience, thank you for being here as well. And you know where to find us next week. So see you again.
The Cloud Commute podcast is sponsored by SimplyBlock, your own elastic block storage engine for the cloud. Get higher IOPS and low predictable latency while bringing down your total cost of ownership. www.simplyblock.io